Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community, with co-host Alan Phillips, attorney at law from North Carolina. Today is August 30th, 2012. Thank you so much for all of our marvelous listeners. We've just incredibly shot up in the list number of listeners we've had over the last couple of months, and I think it's because of the vaccine issue has just taken on a life of its own. And everybody is very concerned. So you can be part of this educational movement. Just tell your friends to listen to the show. Send them an email with a link. Tweet it on Twitter. Post a share. Use that share button for Facebook, Dig, StumbleUpon, Reddit, or any of the other social networks. And you can even give this show to your friends on your own website by copying the embed code and writing a story about what you think about this issue. Go ahead and favorite the show, become a regular listener, and get reminders, too, whenever we're going live. So we welcome you, if you are out there and listening live now, to call us. And there is a number for people. To guest call in is 347-945-6956. And we welcome your thoughts. So I'm going to check to see that the chat is on. Alan, I know you're here with us, and it's a very busy day, the end of the week coming up here.
Boy, it has been busy on many fronts for me, not the least of which is just more and more people contacting me with immunization rights issues and questions, legislatively, personally. It's a growing issue, and I think it will continue. And as we have been talking on the show in the past, and will continue to do today and in the future, at the same time that there is this ongoing awareness movement, people becoming aware of the issue, waking up, if you will, having concerns in growing numbers, and that is wonderfully happening within the medical community itself as well as outside of it. I continue to hear more and more doctors who are asking questions or even becoming proactive themselves in raising awareness, challenging the status quo. But at the same time, there's this enormous machine, a very well-oiled and well-financed machine rolling forward, states passing laws, making it harder to get exemptions. We're going to talk about what's going on in California today in some detail on that point, but it's happening in other states, or as we've talked about in the past, allowing children to consent to vaccines, various things that on many different levels and fronts are pushing the pro-vaccine agenda forward, requiring more and more vaccines of more and more people and making it more and more difficult for anyone to opt out. So all of this is going on, some of it in opposite directions, and it's leading to, I think, ultimately a very positive end result, but a lot of confusion in the process of getting there.
And we're with you. We're listening. We are. We're with you. And because you're on top of this issue every single day, this is your life. This is your mission, what you're concerned about, and have been for so many years, that it seems to be really focusing in on what's happening with our freedoms and why government and industries who are working together are are forcing this issue upon people. I feel like we're really in a war, in a battle, and if people do not stand up and wave a flag and say something, we're going to continue to get whittled away of all of our rights. I mean, today I just got a big notice about the GMO battle in California, and everything is so covertly done now. You know, they embed information in bills that we don't know about, and that's why we love to hear what you write about things that are coming into the law. And so it's all over. It's not just vaccines. It concerns a lot of our rights and freedoms, and to learn about our constitutional rights makes us better citizens.
Well, vaccines, of course, is an enormous issue and more than enough for anyone to take on. But you're absolutely right. The issues we see in vaccines, the vaccine industry, in government industry, are representative, I think, probably to a very large degree of what goes on more or less across the board. It's telling and disturbing both about what this says about the state of our current civilization. Really, I mean, if you step back and take the really broad view, vaccines are just, you know, one piece of a much larger puzzle, and it's not all that different in form and design and function, or dysfunction, as the case may be, from many, many other arenas. But I wanted to make a comment briefly about people's participation, because I hear from people all the time, but it comes up most often, I think, when I hear from people who are dealing with employment vaccine requirements or a similar situation, at least from my point of view, because it involves the same law in terms of how you avoid vaccines, nursing students or med students or other people who are in college courses or curriculums where they have to go out and do clinical rotations in local hospitals or other healthcare facilities, and it's the policy of those hospitals that says they have to be vaccinated to come into the hospital. People, when they're dealing with situations that concern their livelihood, have a very difficult time making the step from their principles or ideals, those of them who do have concerns about vaccines, to a place where they make a decision about actually taking a stand. Because these people, when they do that, they put their livelihood at risk. I often have the nurses or other healthcare professionals who come to me and become my clients are often people who say, well, I'd rather lose my job than have to get a vaccine. Or I'm about to retire anyway, if I lose my job, it's no big deal, or whatever. They'll have some situation or circumstance where they can justify to themselves taking the chance. And when I say taking the chance, you can't fire somebody because they ask for a vaccine exemption. But many, many employees, probably the vast majority of healthcare workers, for example, are what is called in some states an at-will employee. That is, the employer can fire them at any time for no reason. They can't fire them for an unlawful reason, such as they're complaining about religious discrimination or whatever, which is the issue you're dealing with when you're looking for a religious objection or exemption to vaccines in the workplace. But the practical reality is you could ask for the exemption, you could be granted the exemption, and 2 weeks later you can be fired for no reason, even if the real reason is they're just making an example of you or they don't want you in the pool because you make too much of a fuss about vaccines. As a practical matter, it can be impossible at times to prove that you were fired for an improper reason, even if technically or in reality you were, and then technically you would have a legal right. Can you actually enforce that? Many times it's just not possible, reasonably possible. So people make a very difficult decision, and I do not stand in judgment of anybody's decision. I've had nurses call me and say, what does it cost? I say, it costs this much. And as attorneys go, frankly, I'm pretty inexpensive. But sometimes people don't have the money or don't want to spend the money, or they say, I'm just not going to do that. I don't stand in judgment. Everybody has to make their own choices. I have the luxury of sitting in my home office. I am my own boss, and my boss and I are in total agreement on this issue. I don't have to get any vaccines for my job. But I will say that collectively, not about any individual, but collectively, if we do not, or enough of us do not, organize and speak out and direct our concern in constructive ways, the machine that's rolling over us will continue rolling over us, and we are all going to be squashed by it. So everybody has to make the decision for themselves, and I'll support any informed decision, but I hope more of you will see the necessity and value to not only yourselves individually, but to all of us collectively in finding some way that you can speak out, that you can lend your voice, your time, your energy, and your support to helping us shift this paradigm. It's in motion. It's already happening, but we're not there yet, not by a long way, by a long shot.
You're absolutely correct. It's going to take everybody pooling their energy together to make a difference. And if they are going to do that, they have to be organized. And that's why we encourage people to visit the NVIC advocacy portal and learn about what's happening in your state or support folks who are in other states. I mean, you don't have to limit yourself. And if there's a national effort, you can also get involved in that. Basically, just telling somebody else, telling a neighbor about what's going on will make a difference. I recently had somebody give me a call, very, very concerned. They'd already been to three doctors, and the mom had to have the DPAP.
DTaP
for taking a medical course. And as a result, she's just about incapacitated. And so it's not just children that we have to worry about. It's adults also who have these requirements. And this was a person who was very, very vigilant, very health conscious, and even for their children were not giving vaccines, but I guess had a lapse. And, you know, you don't want to say the person feels badly, but this is something that can happen to anybody. And that's why if you want to take a vaccine, that's your prerogative, but please educate yourself.
And don't push your view on anyone else. And I think we could say that of any view, anyone who's for or against a vaccine. The part of the problem or part of the way we got into this mess in the first place is by delegating, which ultimately we have to do to one extent or another. We can't all study and learn everything there is to know about everything we have to deal with in our complex lives in today's society. But we delegated to people, or they took, or some combination of the two, authority and power to a point where they could use it and abuse it. And while not all of us will do that, among human beings collectively, it seems at least so far there have always been those who, given the opportunity to put their hand in the cookie jar, will take the cookies. And that's a very benign metaphor for what has actually happened as a result of this, because there is, I'm adamantly convinced of this in my 18 years of researching the issue, that there are completely unnecessarily multitudes of children around the world who have been permanently disabled or killed by vaccines, and there are other ways to deal with infectious disease than to use the highly dangerous method of vaccines that we're trying to do to deal with it. But we need to, you know, respect decisions on all sides of it, have complete information be available, have there be transparency on all of this, the politics, the information, the process, and then the free choice to make a decision and honor all decisions. And out of honoring all decisions, all informed decisions, and seeing a spectrum of decisions, as I believe we would almost inevitably always have a range of choices, we will see from that, if we do honest and open tracking of the results, what really does and doesn't work. But there's so much suppression now of information and so much effort to control information and beliefs on the issue, there's just no way that we can even get really clear, crystal clear information on much of the issue at all. And that in and of itself, to me, is sufficient basis for why everybody should have the legal right to decide for themselves.
And you know what? I think that we're living in a time where the word trust is high on our list of great concern for us. And we don't trust the government. We don't trust those who are in office. We don't know who to choose to put in office. This is the time where we're hearing all the stump speeches and people telling us what they think that they want us to hear. And we have to evaluate that with a clear mind and with a little bit of skepticism and also with facts. Really study it up. And so we're going to take a look at an article that was posted on the International Medical Council on Vaccination. It says critical thinking, and that is the word that I need, critical thinking for a critical dilemma. And that goes for everything that we're dealing with today. So it's called In Vaccines We Trust with a question mark. Paul Offit threatens religious and philosophical vaccine exemptions. And this is written by Suzanne Humphreys, MD. She is a very respected physician in the medical community who has been a whistleblower, outspoken, and is telling it like it is. So we need to listen up closely to what she has to say. Alan, I don't know whether you have the article before you.
I do.
Okay. So basically, the millionaire vaccine inventor and mandatory vaccine advocate, Paul Offit, recently released a short video for doctors on Medscape. And they provide on this website a transcript of the speech. And they want you to really read that first before going into the response that Suzanne Humphreys, MD, gives. Do you want to go through a little bit of that text also?
Well, I think Dr. Humphreys picks on some very specific points and offers a rebuttal. I think we can get a sense of it without necessarily trying to go through each side separately.
Do you not want to hear a little bit of what Paul Offit has said? I don't mind reading a paragraph or two.
Sure, go ahead.
So he introduces himself, and he's talking from the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and he wants to talk to his constituents about this article that came across his desk from the journal Pediatrics. It was titled Frequency of Alternative Immunization Schedule Use in a Metropolitan Area, written by Steve Robison and his colleagues in Portland, Oregon. And the authors looked at the choice by parents to separate, delay, withhold, or space out vaccinations in the Portland metropolitan area from the years 2003 to 2009. They found a fourfold increase from about 2.5% to 10% of parents who made this choice during those years. The parents were making this choice because they could. With this article as a background, he thought he would talk about the exemptions. And there are three ways to exempt yourself from vaccines. The first way is a medical exemption. A person may have a contraindication to getting a vaccine. Some people are allergic to the gelatin component in the vaccine, which acts as a stabilizer in the chickenpox vaccine. And also, can you believe this, in the nasal spray influenza vaccine, and that would be a reasonable reason, he said, not to give the vaccine. A second way that people can exempt themselves from vaccines are the so-called philosophical or personal belief exemption. 20 states allow that kind of exemption, and he argues that these exemptions are misnamed. So it sounds like he wants to take that away from you. First of all, he says the notion that vaccines are a philosophy is inaccurate. Philo means love, sophos means wisdom. Exactly where is the wisdom in saying that it is better not to get a vaccine than to get them? He's questioning people's belief system. I mean, he can't impose it upon everybody else. The term belief, personal belief, is also incorrect in that vaccines are not a belief system. Religion is a belief system. Can I interject? Science is a belief system.
Yeah, one of the things that's fascinating to me, and I can use atheists as an example, and I feel qualified to pick on atheists because I come from a family that has a high percentage of people who call themselves atheists. And my sort of joke about that is, although I have a lot of respect for, there's a certain kind of integrity that goes with atheism in the sense that they are people who are sort of starting in their own minds, starting from a clean slate, looking at the universe objectively and saying, you know, where is God or whatever. And but I find that atheism is, and I refer to my siblings who are atheists as devout atheists, tongue in cheek, because I feel it's every bit as much a belief system as any religion or any religious beliefs. You know, the point is that whether you believe in God or not, whether you subscribe to one religion or another, all of those are ultimately beliefs. But they have a belief that for them it's not a belief.
Yeah,
that it's objective reality. And
right,
so the same sort of misunderstanding.
Anything that a person believes is the way that he's going to run his life or base his decisions on, it's based on a foundation starting ground of what he believes. That's where you start.
I mean, it is a belief system, especially when you look into the science and politics and you see that what the so-called authorities project as objective, clear science is anything but. And so you end up with conflicting scientific views and conflicting scientific information and conflicting studies and so forth. And so ultimately, even from that point of view, you know, you believe whatever studies you believe or you don't believe, or you have whatever understanding you have. It is very much and every bit as much, if not even more in some ways, frankly, a belief system as anything else. I mean, it can't not be a belief system, really.
Everything is. I mean, I go back to that same thing. You have to make your choices based on something that it's your foundation of what you think is the way for you to do it. And that is based on your belief, whether it's to eat good food or to eat meat or to believe in global warming or not. You're basing it on something. And just because he says, and he goes on, science and medicine are evidence-based systems, it's a system. That system, which he considers evidence-based, is what he wants to believe. He wants to believe in this so-called evidence-based. And even math, you start with an assumption. No matter where you take, if you're in base 1 or base 10 or base 25, you have to start with an assumption, a set of information that you, if you want to communicate with somebody else, you agree that this is what we are going to start with. And that's where he's starting with his own belief system. So,
right. But and I could take it one step further, and I don't want to get too far off because I want to reel us back in here to some of the more tangible points that we want to get to. But one could say that ultimately reality is subjective, but it is for practical purposes, it is appropriate for us at times to divide our reality into what we consider to be subjective aspects and objective aspects. So there's this subjective belief that the objective scientific world is somehow different because of its objectivity, and therefore it is above the subjective world of what one chooses to believe in religious or spiritual sense, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But it still is bottom line as a belief. And ultimately, again, one could argue, I would anyway, that all of reality is ultimately subjective, even those components that for practical purposes we refer to as objective.
Absolutely.
But I don't want to get too philosophical here.
Well, it's not really completely philosophical. I mean, this is our reality. Our reality is that things change based on how we perceive something. And that is, for some people, what determines how they run their life. And so I think this is a really good conversation, but we will continue on. I mean, he is putting blinders on all of the information coming from the alternative camps, from the people who are providing information negating the benefits of vaccines or showing the harm that they do. What he is putting his basket of full of pennies in, whatever you want to say, he's saying that he thinks you only need to look at 20,000 studies that have evaluated the safety or efficacy of vaccines. And he's not saying that a number of them are hiding information or have been tampered with and not giving the reality of what the outcomes are or how things are manipulated and showing little teeny pieces of charts instead of the full chart to see a trend in historical cycles of epidemic disease. There's a lot that's manipulated to look at one point of view. And what
not,
I was
not bothering to mention, for example, that two former editors of the New England Journal of Medicine have both gone public saying you can no longer trust the medical literature. Overlooking that trivial little detail that everything he's all the basket he's putting all his eggs in is woven very loose and full of holes, shall we say.
Yeah, so you have to worry about what's going to fall out of that basket. And one more point that I just came to mind is when we have these limiting beliefs, it prevents us from moving forward to do something that is new and innovative. And a person, you can take the Olympics as an example. If you as an athlete believe that this is as much as you can run or as far as you can go is in your ability to achieve something, then you're going to stop at that point. But if you say, well, I can run faster, I can jump higher, I can swim longer, then you're going to go beyond what you consider to be humanly possible. And I think that this is also the difference between many people who are looking at alternative answers to those who are in the regimented camp of people who are just going to take it at face value. This is science. This is evidence-based. This is the facts on the ground. No, they want to go beyond those and look further with an open mind. And I think that's the difference.
But I'll tell you something I saw that I haven't yet looked at either Paul Offit's or Dr. Humphrey's comments in very close detail. But what I have seen at an initial view is that I believe both of them have missed the boat on the vaccine religious exemption issue. There's some amount of debate or arguing here about whether the Bible or other religious texts apply to vaccines or whether or not they even could apply to vaccines. It's sort of a religion argument here. And when I say missed the boat, the point here is that the starting place about vaccine religious exemptions, and from what I have seen of Offit in the past and what I've heard so far that you've said today, he's just never been on this page at all. The starting place is, what does the law allow? What does the law, what religious beliefs or what beliefs qualify as religious in the sense that they have protection under the law? Because any of us is free to say what we think our beliefs are and whether we think they're religious or not. But as it applies to or concerns a legal right, the final say there is, what does the law say? And so it doesn't matter, for example, as a starting point, whether or not you think the Bible can apply to vaccines unless for purposes of a religious exemption. A legal right. For purposes of a legal right, it doesn't matter whether you think the Bible applies to vaccines or not, unless you first start with, is that a legal option? And I want to give just, again, as a sort of a broad general sweep, because there are exceptions everywhere in the law, and this is something that is generally true but not always true, that
okay,
in the universe of vaccine, U.S. vaccine religious exemptions, as a general rule, we get to decide what we get to have whatever beliefs we want to have. We can interpret, if we're Christian, the Bible any way we want to. We can interpret whatever our religion is any way we want to. We can have no affiliation with any organized religion whatsoever, but still have beliefs that qualify for federal First Amendment protection under state or federal exemption and waiver laws that we can then legally qualify. And so the whole argument about whether or not the vaccines or the Bible, for example, applies to vaccines as a genuine religious belief, that whole debate is a moot point from a legal perspective because you get to decide that for yourself.
So right. I think his argument is he's proposing an argument to say that you don't have a right to your religious belief, basically. I mean, he's saying
well,
that
his, you know, the vaccine
he's interpreting
advocates,
your religion for you. He cannot interpret your religion for you.
Not as a legal matter. You know, if he had his way, of course, he'd be allowed to do that, and there'd be no religious exemptions, and his profits would shoot up correspondingly. But this, and he's not the first doctor, he won't be the last one, you know, to make that kind of case, that there was an article in a North Carolina newspaper, I think, a few months ago, where a doctor was accusing everyone in the state of North Carolina who exercises a religious exemption of lying about their religious beliefs to get the exemption and, you know, causing, of course, havoc on everybody in the population as a result of that. Completely mistaken both on the legal and medical and scientific aspects of the issue, but dutifully spouting what he was taught and obviously believes, because he was I think, unprofessional in his attack, personal attack of North Carolina citizens as he was, and in particular parents. I think, nevertheless, I credit him with probably having his heart in the right place and wanting to do the right thing and really wanting people to be safe and healthy and so forth. It's just a shame that so many doctors still are unthinking puppets of the pharmaceutical industry, that they take what's handed to them and swallow it hook, line, and sinker. And I wish we were in a society that had the level of functioning, the level of integrity, where that was a reasonable thing to do, because doctors, individuals, don't have time to go out and research all this on their own, and they don't have room within their profession to think independently, which is why I just have tremendous admiration for people like Dr. Suzanne Humphreys and other doctors, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Dr. Mayer Eisenstein, and there's a long list of medical doctors who are not only looking into this issue for themselves and coming to their own conclusions, but who feel compelled by what they find to go out there and share things with the world. So I do want to make a point, being as clear as I can, that I'm a huge fan of Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, and I don't want anything I say to be taken in any way as anything other than clarification on some of the legal aspects here, because if the time allows, I'm going to be critical of both Dr. Paul Offit and Dr. Humphreys in terms of their exchange as it pertains to vaccine religious exemptions.
Do you not think that the words of Mr. Offit have pushed many buttons, has stepped over the line of acceptability to the point that now people who perhaps never would have thought twice or blinked about this issue now have a question in their mind where he's arguing what people are believing, whether they are Christian or Jehovah's Witness or reading the Old Testament or the Quran. I mean, he's almost saying to people of belief, of spiritual belief or religious belief, whether they are of a denomination or not, he's telling other people how they should interpret their doctrine. Yeah,
I think there's something different that's really going on here. I mean, I don't disagree with anything you said, but I think what's going on here is more calculated than that. He's controlling the larger conversation. He has put something out here that he knows is not factual or accurate, as he does over and over again. Many of the doctors follow him without thinking for themselves, whether they come to the right conclusion or not, their hearts are in the right place. I don't believe for a second that Dr. Offit is ignorant of the harm that vaccines cause and the role that he's playing. I think it's a very calculated role. The things that he puts out are not a personal opinion that I feel moved by the vaccine issue that I want to educate the public. His moves are much more calculated than that, I believe. I mean, this is speculation on my part, and people can disagree. So he threw something out there knowing exactly how we would react to it, and Dr. Humphreys, you know, bit the bait, hook, line, and sinker, and responded. So she's interacting with that, and that's not an – I'm not saying that in any way whatsoever as a put down to Dr. Humphreys. But
that's
what she
very
has done,
interesting. It's very interesting what you're proposing here.
I just think it's much more calculated than that.
Yeah.
And that it's about – it almost doesn't matter what anybody says in response to it. He knows he's going to trigger that response from us. But what he's doing is a calculated step to control the larger conversation. The result of it, if he's successful – and so far he and his people have been successful to a large degree, although they are increasingly threatened by more and more of us waking up and speaking out and so forth. And thank God there are people like Dr. Humphreys – who are doing this, you know, responding to him in these issues. So please don't misunderstand me on that point.
Haven't said anything against her yet, but
I was critical. I am critical of some of the things she says in her article. Given an opportunity, I can elaborate. And I think both of them missed the boat in terms of the issue in that they're not recognizing that, first and foremost, it's a legal issue, and you have to understand the legal framework, and then once you have that, that frames the discussion. So, again, like I said before, for example, it's a moot point as regard to either one of these doctors. It's a moot point whether or not the Bible, you know, you think the Bible applies to vaccines or not, because from a legal perspective, in the vast majority of exemption and waiver contexts and situations, you get to decide that for yourself. So there's either answer is right. Or wrong.
Either answer? What do you mean either answer is right or wrong?
If you believe that you can't refuse vaccines for religious reasons because vaccines came along 2,000 years after the Bible was written, then that's your First Amendment protected right. If you believe that it doesn't matter when vaccines came up, that you can interpret something written 2,000 years ago to say that you are legitimately opposed to vaccines, that's correct too if that's what you believe. If the belief is religious in nature and if it's sincerely held, and we could split hairs on those phrases as well in terms of what the law means by that, but as a starting point, if it's religious in nature and sincerely held, it is protected so long as there is a law giving you the right to the religious exemption in the first place. So you don't have a right to a religious exemption for school entry, for example, in Mississippi and West Virginia because there's not a law there providing for religious exemption.
Okay.
And the Constitution does not require states to offer a religious exemption. But once they do offer it, the state has to abide by the First Amendment, the federal constitutional boundaries, because that's a higher legal authority than state law. And because of the way our legal system works, that part of the federal Constitution also applies to state and local governments. So there are the lines there. There are boundaries that states supposedly have to abide by. I say supposedly because laws get passed and have been recently passed that I believe are unconstitutional in terms of a proper objective legal analysis, if you'll pardon my use of the word objective there. But because maybe it's just my subjective analysis, just being a little facetious there with regard to our earlier conversation. But the point is there's a commencing legal argument that some of the laws that have been passed recently regarding vaccines are unconstitutional. The technical reality is that when a law is enacted by state or federal legislature, it's presumed to be constitutional unless and until a court says otherwise. So me telling you that I believe it's unconstitutional doesn't make it legally unconstitutional. What I mean is, in effect, that there's a compelling argument that I believe would win in court if these laws that I'm calling unconstitutional were actually challenged in court. And that's what needs to happen with some of these laws. They need to be either amended or repealed to make them constitutional, or they need to be challenged in court so we can get a court to strike the law because it is unconstitutional.
Can I ask you about that religious exemption that it says two states, Mississippi and West Virginia? I'm not sure about Connecticut also. But if a state does not have a religious exemption, just clarify one more time, but the federal government allows religion to be your right, does the federal religious rights to religious freedom cover you or not?
Not for purposes of school enrollment in those two states. And you're asking a really, really good question here, because we have, to one extent or another, the federal First Amendment right to the free exercise of religion in general, whether or not there's a vaccine religious exemption statute in our state. But to make a long story short, if there's not a religious exemption statute in your state, then you do not have a federal First Amendment right to refuse vaccines for purposes of school enrollment in your state.
That state or local government is regulating the school district.
School is going to be a state law issue.
Right, a state law issue. Okay. So then you just have to move.
Or become legislatively active and successful. It takes both to change a law. But that's a really good point. The legal systems that we have in this country are, I think, sometimes seemingly ridiculously complex. And as just a very brief comment about that, we have an enormously complex society. When you really stop and think about it, all the interactions and levels of interactions with individuals and communities and businesses and so forth, and in counties and states and countries. I mean, just an amazingly complex world that we live in today in terms of human beings and human life and human interaction. And I think our legal systems mirror that complexity, necessarily, at least up to a point. Because the more complex and intricate our society becomes in its collective interactions, the more need there is to have, to the extent we reasonably can, clearly defined rules and boundaries and laws that guide us into what is or isn't appropriate behavior. Obviously, there are huge disagreements in most areas, probably, about where the lines should be, who should get to draw them, and so forth. But the law is whatever it is at any given point in time with regard to any particular issue, whether clear or not. And that's the issue here, a huge issue with vaccines. We have whatever limitations we have, and let's get clear on what they are so that we can be focused on what we need to do to change that, to have it be what we feel that it needs to be.
Okay. So are you still there?
I am.
Okay. We're going to go back to that article, and I just wanted to make a mention that the last paragraph of Mr. Offit's deposition, his article to folks out there is that it seems to be really emotionally based, and that he is getting up into people's that level to get them fired up. And he says that he wants to call exemptions what they really are. And he says we should call them the quote, "I do not want to get vaccines because I have read a lot of scary things about vaccines and I'm afraid that they might hurt my child. And I am not sure I believe in pharmaceutical companies or the medical establishment or the government. So I do not want my child to get them," unquote, "vaccine exemption." And that would be, he says, more honest. But he's brought up every single point of why we are a skeptical nation, because of the criminal activities, the fines, the lies, the deception, all of those things. We have a right to have our belief, or whoever is believing this thing, that we want to question the information that's handed to us and make our own decisions. So he's really getting at the heart of the issue in his last paragraph. What do you think about that?
I'm reluctant to endorse anything the guy says because I feel like he's not a genuine and honest on the issue generally, but I'm tempted to to rubber stamp everything you just said. I think there's a lot of merit and truth to that. I do think the fear of adverse events is a huge driving force in rising exemption rates, but there's a disconnect that I think he's leaving out. I think there surely must be some number of people who exercise religious exemptions who really don't have genuine, sincerely held religious objections to vaccines. They just don't have any other option in most states, for example.
If your creator, if your God says, take care of your body, it is your vessel that your soul is put into. What you do to your body is going to, if it's not going to be the best thing that it can be for it to keep it healthy, then you're, you know, this is what you want to do. And that is,
you cannot separate
the physical and the spiritual. You know,
not in the common sense realm, but in the legal realm, they are mutually exclusive for all practical purposes. And so, and this gets into some of what I refer to as legal pitfalls, and why I am a mantra of mine, if you will, is that if you're in any situation where you have to state your beliefs, get information from a reliable legal source about what does and doesn't qualify. The practical reality in terms of legal analysis, for example, whether we like it or not, and I adamantly hate this, but it's my legal assessment, vaccines legally are safe and effective. So if you write, they've gotten licensed by the FDA, they've gone through that procedure. If they were bad vaccines, they wouldn't get licensed. Now, do I believe that in reality? No. But this is how the law works.
Well, can't we cite all the adverse effects? Can't we cite the 27,500 people who were affected in India?
Law says that that's a reason that you can refuse vaccines, then yes, you can. If it doesn't, you can't. And religion under the law has nothing to do with science and medicine. And vaccines,
we put in God we trust on our money.
If you try to argue the vaccine controversy in a vaccine religious belief statement, if you're in a situation where they can scrutinize beliefs, kiss your exemption goodbye.
Right.
It's not because I'm not saying that because I disagree with it. I would love nothing more than to be able to do that. But what I'm telling you is that in terms of the legal analysis, that's not a good place to go.
Right.
So,
I understand. If you want to be within the letter of the law, you have to speak within the law.
If you want to be safe, if you want your exemption to hold up, if you want to actually get that exemption. Well, it's not about necessarily in a court of law. The point is that if you're in a situation where somebody gets to decide whether or not your beliefs qualify, the vast majority of the time they're going to be looking for a reason to reject you. And if you have something that doesn't meet the letter of the law, then you're going to get rejected. Now, if that's a risk you're willing to take, then go out and write your exemption statement on your own, and many people do that on their own, and they're successful. But if you're in a situation where they can scrutinize, and that includes some state school exemption laws, but any military exemption, any healthcare employee or other employee exemption effort, anybody doing immigration law, which includes foreign adoption, and especially people in what I call vaccine custody disputes where the parents disagree about whether to vaccinate the kids or not. There are a number of areas where, on the one hand, it's great that just about anybody who's not an atheist can potentially qualify. So there, the fears about do you have to be a Christian Scientist in most situations, those are concerns you can dispense with. That's the good news. The bad news, if that's what you want to call it, is that the way the law works in this area is that in many instances it's not consistent with common sense. So, again, if it's an important place and you have to explain your beliefs, get some additional assistance with that. But a lot of people very reasonably have misunderstandings about the law. And I wanted to pick on one little piece here because it's one I've seen over and over again over the years that showed up in Dr. Humphrey's response. And she makes a reference to something. I don't know if I can find the actual number here, but it's a public law number. And she makes the assertion, you know, this is law. And based on that assumption, goes on to make her point in the article. And that public law that she refers to is not a law, despite the word law being part of the label that applies to it. It was actually a resolution by Congress back in 1983 that was asking President Reagan to declare 1983 the year of the Bible. Now, our federal First Amendment makes it really, really clear, and our legal precedent from the U.S. Supreme Court and other courts over many decades make it very clear that government cannot endorse any particular religion or restrict anybody's access to practice whatever religion they choose to practice, you know, within limits, of course. People, you know, you can't sacrifice a virgin every Saturday night anymore. You know, that's against the law. But, I mean, within reasonable limits. The government cannot interfere with religion. It cannot endorse or prohibit the practice, free exercise of religion. Of course, Congress could not pass a law making the Bible the official document of the U.S., or I don't remember the exact wording of it, and I don't have it right in front of me. And unfortunately, the phrase public law is about as reliable in terms of a common sense interpretation as the phrase mercury free in vaccines. Mercury free vaccines are often not mercury free, and in this instance, public law was not actually a law, it was just a resolution. Curiously, President Reagan did declare 1983 the year of the Bible at some formal annual breakfast event. Probably something Congress and the president did more so than not for political reasons to, you know, get the support of the religious right. Most of what politicians and elected officials these days do has an intent connected with political agendas, and almost always it has some political ramifications or implications, even if it doesn't have a political intent behind it. So, you know, I'm not going to go too far criticizing Congress and the president back in 1983, but again, the whole issue of vaccine religious exemptions needs to be understood if it's going to be applied most effectively. The rights are going to be applied most effectively. They need to first be viewed in terms of a legal framework. And I just really want to underscore again that people in our country have the right to believe anything they want to believe. And in terms of exercising a right, it's really important to understand where the lines are of what does and doesn't qualify.
Okay. And when certain persons, like prominent persons, have a belief system that is opposed to the conventional, they may be called out for it, like these whistleblowers. Why don't you tell us any specific points in this article that you wanted to pull out and give us a analysis or whatever you wanted to say about it?
Well, I really said in you know, general terms, the you know, the main point I wanted to underscore there. I was sort of, in a sense, stepping outside of the Offit-Humphreys debate on the aspects dealing with whether or not the Bible or any other religious text can fairly or reasonably be said to be attributed to be a basis for accepting or refusing vaccines. But there's another point that I really wanted to underscore here too. Offit is partly right. He's saying a lot of people are afraid of adverse events and they're claiming religious exemptions, and he says that's disingenuous, and I have no doubt in my mind that that probably sometimes occurs. But what he's missing is the point that you were making, Debbie, and I sort of jumped on you a little bit about that in terms of how the law works, but it is not at all what would be the word, impractical or non-feasible or unbelievable or whatever. I mean, let me rephrase it in the positive. It's perfectly understandable and reasonable and legitimate from a legal point of view, if not otherwise, also otherwise, that somebody might start with concerns about vaccine adverse events, and that might cause them to reexamine their relationship with God or with their religion,
and they may
come back to a very legitimate, that, you know, that may take them to a place that very legitimately is religious in nature and an objection. Oh my gosh. I mean, I can give you a real classic example real quick if you want to.
Anything that is going to challenge you in your life journey, if you get a diagnosis of cancer, all of a sudden you become very religious and you believe in the power of prayer as something that will heal. So what we are saying here is there is no in you as an individual, there is no separation between church and state. You are a whole human being. Everything goes into you. Mind, your mental status, your intellect, your spirituality, you know, your physical body, everything is one in you as an individual. To try and split it up into components just because it's a government regulated, you know, a secular society is really a false belief system in a way.
Well, yes and no, though, and I want to be real clear here, Deb, because what you're saying is absolutely reasonable, commonsensical. It's a reflection of what our lives really are day to day. Unfortunately, the law isn't always consistent with that. And in terms of vaccine religious exemptions, again, if you're in that situation where your beliefs can be scrutinized, you want to make sure you understand where the law agrees with common sense and where it doesn't. Because if you go just down a reasonable common sense path, you may, and in my experience, most of my clients do, wander into one or more of what I call the legal pitfalls. You know, the legal
It's like going into a maze and going down the wrong one where you can't get out. So,
you know, it's perfectly reasonable for a parent that a parent could genuinely believe God doesn't want my child to risk permanent disability or death from a vaccine. And yet, the legal precedent, as I read it, seems to hold religion and anything that's not religion as being more or less mutually exclusive. And nobody in this day and age can say that vaccines are 100% safe, and I'm not pretending that the law says that. It doesn't. The federal government's paid out $2.5 billion to vaccine victims and their families. But what the law does say is that vaccines, as a presumptions can be rebutted, and that's a whole other conversation, but the starting place is there's a presumption that vaccines that have been licensed by the FDA, vaccines that have been mandated by state or federal legislatures or agencies are presumed to be reasonably safe and effective. And so when you're writing a religious exemption statement, you want to start with, you want to have that conform with what the law says now, not what maybe you and I would agree the law should say and that we hope it will say someday.
I guess what we're saying is we're not in a position to prove the government wrong in their innocence. We are in the position,
but the place to do that is not in the exercise of an exemption. You need to take that argument to the state legislatures and say, hey, you guys, here's the information. So don't misinterpret what I'm saying is there's nothing we can do about this if we disagree with it. There's a lot we can do about it. The mistake, though, is when people try to do that in their religious exemption statements or in the exercise of any exemption for that matter. That's not the place to take the argument. So there's a lot we can do.
So much sense. So much sense you're making today, Alan.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because it's a critical distinction. I see a lot of people spend a lot of time and energy with their heart in the right place on this issue, but going down paths that I don't think are likely to be productive. And so I see part of my job with my understanding about vaccine rights from the legal perspective as trying to help people understand where to direct their time and energies with what issue or what point or what concern so that they can be more constructive. So go to the NVIC's advocacy portal. It's nvicadvocacy.org and sign up so that you can become a participant in the vaccine legislative process without having to spend much time at all. That's a really good place for folks to go. But in the meantime, if you're dealing with an exemption issue right now, find out what the law is that applies to your specific situation and do what it says and don't argue the vaccine controversy in that exemption.
This was very beneficial. We went in circles, meandering around, but we ended up with a really solid conclusion. And Mr. Offit, in his final statement, he may have picked upon something that really is true, but the reason that people go about using the exemption in the way that they do is they want to be within the law. And if this is how you have to get your driver's license, you know, if this is how you have to come to the best conclusion to your family, then you have to work within the statutes of the law as they are today.
Well, one of the most effective ways to do disinformation is to have a mixture of truth and non-truth. And Offit has hit on some key points here. And by doing that, he gains credibility and is going to pull people in perhaps who are on the fence. But what he doesn't do, in my opinion, based on what you read in the last paragraph, and I have to give him some credit for, I think he's on the mark with a lot of that, but I think he doesn't go quite far enough. It may be that he's not particularly a religious person himself, so he doesn't really have a recognition or doesn't really want to validate religion, or it may be that his agenda at the outset of his writing, again, is to control the conversation, to combat the anti-vaccine movement and so forth. But taking him at face value, he doesn't go the next step to recognize that, well, people do have religious beliefs. We have broad religious freedom in this country. It's not absolute, but it's very, very extensive. And people can potentially start from a concern about adverse events, have a reawakening in their own religious beliefs and religious life. And maybe they realize, because they never had considered it before, but maybe they realize there is something in the Bible or wherever or in their own personal religious beliefs that they had missed or hadn't seen before, or maybe they have a new belief emerge. People's beliefs change.
Right, so, or they find something that does apply in their religious belief system to absolutely. How they care for their children or themselves.
Well, let's come back and talk about the California bill that we didn't have time to get to today because there's a big change there. But
okay, so we want to just conclude by letting folks know about your vaccine rights ebook and where they can get that, and that you are up for speaking at many engagements, a keynote speaker or educational forum, whatever it might be, and to give you a call. So why don't you give your contact information?
Sure. You can find out all my contact information at vaccinerights.com, and you can also get a lot of good free information about exemptions and then the ebook available at vaccinerights.com as well that goes in-depth talking about vaccine exemption and waiver law in a variety of different contexts. And I'd love to do public speaking on the issue, so folks are welcome to contact me. I've done everything from talk to five mothers in somebody's living room to do formal presentations at international conferences. Would be happy to come and talk to you and your group. And thank you, Debbie, for the opportunity to
right. And I would, yeah, definitely. People need to be able to contact you. And as we do on other shows, people ask, send in their questions ahead of time. So if you have a specific question, go ahead and email Alan or to myself at homeopathyworldcommunity@gmail.com. Send us your inquiries or comments, and we will report back on the air on the next show. And this is a great way to keep the conversation going. I also want to let you know that September 3rd, we're going into September on Monday. We're going to have Mary Ellen Turner talking about the similar suffering that heals wounds. We're talking about homeopathic plant remedies. It's going to be fascinating conversation with her on the Health In Show, a live video stream show. Just go to Homeopathy World Community and click on the banner. We have recently had a number of great shows. The last one was with Amnon Nissan, the show producer, about cyberbullying. And I'll tell you what, I've been thinking a lot about cyberbullying just in the vaccine world and the alternative world, the homeopathic world, that really that's happening to us on a massive scale by large domination. And then and also on Wednesday, Dr. Adil Kasim is back with us Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. These are all Eastern Time USA shows on Blog Talk Radio. He answers questions from around the world, from Egypt, Japan, just the United Arab Republic, wherever you are. He gets messages and questions about medical issues and answers them as honestly and completely as he possibly can, including homeopathic remedies and how it would be approached in that way. So those are our shows, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday with Alan. Get on the Homeopathy World community and read all of our articles. We just have tons of stuff going on. So that's it for us. I'm going to sign us off, and I'll see you next Thursday. Okay, a California bill, right?
Yep, we'll see if we can take that up next Thursday and whatever else there is in the news and currently and whatever else folks are asking about.
Thanks so much. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everyone.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Share your life, let your truth